5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Flight cleared for takeoff.
Hello and welcome back to Kentucky Caliber. We've sort of been on a little bit of a hiatus this year due to the fact that I've been working on a podcast for the museum. I'm the executive director of the Big Sandy Heritage Center Museum, and I've been working on a podcast for the museum, which, by the way, I'm the executive director of the museum there, but here on this podcast, I'm just promoting and talking about my own personal views. I'm not speaking for or on behalf of the organization. But nonetheless, I've been working on putting together a new podcast for them that I hope will be launching in October. We've already got a couple of episodes all the way through from recording through post-production and several more that are still in the post-production phase, which is where we have to edit and clean up the sound and get them ready for publication on the platform. So those are out there and should be coming live hopefully next month, but that's taken up a bit of time, so that's why I haven't been able to put as much time into this one. I was really glad to be on the once again to be on the Jack Patty Show today in Lexington, WVLK 590 AM, the morning show. It's amazing to me, this morning show I was only on there for half an hour. I'm usually on there for the whole hour. This time I got 30 minutes, and 30 minutes just goes by in a blink. Like, it's just, you blink and you miss it. It's 30 minutes, it's gone. I mean, there's only one commercial break, too. So it wasn't like there was a whole lot of ads that were taking up time or anything like that. It just seemed to me like the conversation just, it just flew by. And there were a few things that we were brought up this morning that we didn't really get to talk about in depth due to the time constraints on the show or on the radio program, because we were very limited there in how much we can devote to any single topic or issue. And I wanted to explore some of those a little bit more in this one, starting with, and most importantly, since it's front and center, the presidential election of 2024 and the upcoming debate between former President Trump and current Vice President Kamala Harris. Debates, you know, from a historian's perspective, looking at it from the past, a lot of times folks will say, well, you know, debates don't matter. And sometimes they don't. But they're often scripted, and the questions are really broad and the answers are super short, and we kind of know ahead of time what to expect. And so oftentimes, even at that level of a presidential election, we'll end up with a back and forth that really doesn't illuminate much, doesn't offer anything new, or doesn't give us any memorable kind of sound bites that we can take with us. However, there are presidential debates that do matter and do have are very consequential. And we saw that happen in the previous debate in this election between former President Trump and current President Biden, who Biden, of course, his performance when that debate was so bad that I think helped him make the decision, or helped folks convince him that it was the right thing to do for him to drop out of the election. And, you know, that's if folks or the critics have problems with that, I mean, you know, one of your jobs as a candidate is to show up for debates and forums and other public gatherings where you're going to be talking about issues, or in this case, debating your opponent. It's your job to show up there ready to go and to do a good enough job to convince voters that you deserve their vote, that you, in his case, another term of office. And so when he failed to do that in such a spectacular fashion, it's not unreasonable, and it was certainly not unreasonable for folks in the party to demand that President Biden step aside at that point, because he had failed to do that. Republicans call it a coup, which is nonsense. It's not a coup. And the question I always ask them is this, my Republican friends: do you think Richard Nixon being forced to resign the presidency was a coup? And they always say, well, no, of course not. And I said, well, what do you mean? You just said political pressure to step aside amounts to a coup if it's Biden, but then it doesn't when it's Nixon. And Nixon didn't drop out of an election campaign. He resigned the presidency. He actually left office. Biden is still in office. He just dropped out of the election. So Biden is still president. He's just not running for re-election. Nixon actually dropped out of the whole office altogether. And he did that under pressure from his own party. The Senate majority leader came to Richard Nixon and told him, Mr. President, you do not have 35 senators, because at that time the House was drawing up or talking about drawing up articles of impeachment against President Nixon. And the Senate Majority Leader just simply laid it out for him. If this goes to a trial, which this, that's what an impeachment is, with the Senate acts as the, that's where they vote. If it goes to an impeachment, you're going to lose. That's what he meant when he said, you don't have 35 senators. That was the Senate Majority Leader's way of telling then President Nixon, if this goes to impeachment, you're going to be impeached and removed from office because you don't have enough senators on your side to survive the process. And knowing that, the next day, not after a few weeks, not after a few months, the next day, President Nixon not only dropped out of future elections, he resigned the office of the presidency. And that's not considered a coup because it's not. Republicans today don't consider that a coup. So whenever you hear them talk about, oh, the Biden being forced out of office was a coup, it's and some Democrats I've heard say it, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's ludicrous. It has no basis in fact. It has no substance at all. It is not remotely a coup. So you can just dismiss that altogether. It's not a serious argument. I'm not sure exactly what people who are saying it hope to accomplish by saying that. I don't know if they actually believe that it was a coup or if they just think making that kind of negative association will hurt Biden in this election. I don't know if that's what they think. I'm not sure what their motives are. It doesn't matter. It's not a coup. It's ridiculous. And the argument has no substance. But back to this election that's still going on, now that President Biden has stepped aside in his reelection efforts and Vice President Harris is the Democratic Party nominee, we're going to get set up for the first presidential debate between her and former President Trump. The significant thing about this debate, first of all, is this is the only one. So far, the two candidates have only agreed to meet on this one occasion face-to-face. There could possibly be more as we go further into the get closer to Election Day, but with only, you know, a few weeks left, it's hard to see that another major debate would get scheduled and organized that quickly. It could, but I doubt it. So I think this debate that's going to happen next week will probably be the only time we see former President Trump and current Vice President Harris face-to-face in a presidential forum, in a presidential debate for the 2024 elections. So that's number one. That's one of the reasons why it's extremely important. And we saw just in the last debate what an impact a bad debate performance can have on a candidate. Things I would look for, I am firmly in the Vice President Harris camp on this. I plan to vote for Harris and Waltz. You should too. And what should they look for? What should we look for? What should she do in this debate to win against former President Trump? I think two things. The first one is going to be the easier of the two for Vice President Harris. First, she has to not, and this may sound a little bit counterintuitive, but really to look successful, if not win this debate, one thing she has to do is to convince America she's not Donald Trump. And I think the interesting thing about this particular debate, and I mentioned this morning on the Jack Patty Show, that's the same thing that Donald Trump needs to do. He needs to try to not be Donald Trump for the duration of this debate. That's why his campaign was so eager to keep his microphone turned off while the other candidate was talking, because they know he's going to give in to his worst instincts and make comments or say something ridiculous, which he does all the time. He'll say something ridiculous and it's going to hurt him during the debate. His campaign knows that. I don't think he knows that about himself, really. I don't think he has the self-awareness to see it, but they do. And they tried to stop it for that reason. So all she has to do is not be Donald Trump. Donald Trump has to not be Donald Trump. And the big problem for him is he is. So I don't think that's a contest he can win. I think that's a clear advantage for Vice President Harris. The second thing I think she should do, and this would be my main strategy, is to go after the credibility or lack thereof of former President Trump to speak on almost any of the issues that he's going to raise or that he's already raised in this election. And I'll give you an example of the most recent one. Recently, and former President Trump offers plans for everything. He's got a plan for everything to hear him tell it. But most recently was a plan to make housing more affordable in the United States. Well, clearly there is a problem in the housing market. Clearly there are a lot of hardworking people who can't afford to buy homes because the houses that they want, or even a minimum level housing that would be big enough for them and their family, are simply priced beyond their means. And that's a widespread problem. So it's absolutely a problem. Why is Donald Trump the absolutely most wrong person you can think of to even address that issue? He's a real estate guy. He made millions of dollars inflating property values to make a fortune. And he's even been, and that's even been proven in court. Not only did he inflate the value of property, he inflated the actual size of the property. In other words, if properties had a certain square footage, he would write on the tax forms that it was twice as much as it actually was. He would put it's 10,000 square feet if it's only 5, in order to secure more favorable terms to him when it comes to how the property or the value of that property was assessed and later on the tax liability involved. Well, when the later portion came up and it came time for taxes, then he would actually say it was smaller. So you're talking about a real estate guy who has made his living on gaming the system. He is part of the problem. You cannot bring in someone who is part of the problem to the housing system and ask them to fix it. They're one of the people who caused it in the first place. So it makes absolutely no sense to bring someone in who's part of the problem and ask them to solve it. So he has no credibility at all to speak on the housing crisis, and he has no credibility at all to offer solutions to the housing crisis or the housing problems. I don't know if it's actually a crisis. Maybe it is a crisis. I think it's more in certain locations, like in certain cities where prices are really high and other places where there isn't as much available in the first place. I think it probably in those areas you could say there's a crisis. Nationwide, it's a problem. I don't know that it's nationwide a crisis. It's definitely nationwide a problem. But those are two very different things. And so we can't solve this by bringing someone in who's part of the problem. And that goes for a lot of other issues too. For example, law and order. A convicted criminal is going to go on television next week and tell you that they are the answer to increasing and improving law and order in this country. You're a convict. You have absolutely no credibility to speak on that issue because you've been convicted of breaking the law. How am I supposed to believe you're going to enforce the law? You're going to uphold the rule of law. You're going to be someone we can trust to do both of those things from the office of the presidency, the highest office in the land, the seat of power in the executive branch of our government. How are we supposed to believe that someone who's already broken the law and been convicted in court, it's not an accusation, it's not a rumor, it's not a rumor someone just started on the internet to discredit Donald Trump. He has been convicted by a jury of his peers, a jury. And so far, there has been no indication that the court system is going to overturn that verdict. Can he appeal it? Of course. That's the right of everyone in this country. If you feel you were wrongfully convicted, absolutely. People who are convicted have a right to appeal, and sometimes those appeals work, and the original conviction gets overturned. But the numbers tell us that that's pretty rare. That doesn't happen a lot. I don't expect it to happen in this case. And as of right now, it hasn't happened, so he is still currently a convict. So to have someone who has already been convicted of breaking the law tell us that he is going to be the one we should trust to fix the law makes absolutely no sense. It makes no sense. And Vice President Harris should go after him on both of those fronts. He should absolutely hammer him and bring that and repeat that message over and over again. The lack of credibility that Donald Trump has, to solve these problems and even to speak on these problems because he has contributed to them. If you're breaking the law, which he did, you're part of the problem. You're part of the reason why we have so many legal issues in the country. And what I'm talking about there is one of the key pieces of, really, it's one of the central issues at stake in this election. And that is the rule of law and upholding the rule of law, which means we don't make exceptions to existing law simply because of who someone is. That means it doesn't matter if they're rich, doesn't matter what their title is, and in this case, former president, and it doesn't matter what those things have nothing to do with the guilt or innocence when it comes to a breaking of the law. That's what the rule of law means. It means that the law is above one individual. It's above wealth. It's above one position in government. These things are fundamental to our way of life in the United States. The rule of law is a cornerstone of our system of governments, of our economy, and our way of life. It's one of the reasons why our economy is so successful, because we have the rule of law in this country. So when people break the law, like he did, or when companies commit fraud or crimes or individuals do, they're held accountable and the system stops them from continuing. If you look at countries where that doesn't happen, who have weak court systems, and I'll give you two examples. One you may know of, Venezuela, and its economy is an absolute unmitigated disaster. And one of the reasons why Republicans always say, oh, it's socialism, it's communism. No, it's not. The reason why Venezuela, their economy is such a mess, is not just because they're a petro state and that, everyone fights over the wealth of the oil dollars. But another reason why is because of their court system, or rather, I should say, their lack thereof. It's completely owned by Maduro and his cronies. Cronyism has annihilated and destroyed the judicial system in Venezuela. The exact same thing that's already been done in Venezuela is what Donald Trump wants to do here in the United States, which is just another reason why people should vote against Donald Trump. He is trying to do to our court system what Venezuela has already done to theirs, which is completely destroy it. And soon thereafter, not only their government, but also their economy goes by the wayside, which it has, leading to a mass exodus of people and fueling the problem on our southern border, which is we have more people coming across than we can handle. The system simply isn't set up to cope with that many. Even for folks who want to cross legally, the system is just being strained beyond its ability to handle them. Although that's an interesting point. That was another thing I meant to bring up this morning at the on the radio show. It's sort of an awkward position there for Republicans when they say the border crisis, is worse now than it's ever been, or is worse than it was last year, or is worse than it was when Donald Trump was in office. Actually, the numbers are down. Customs and Border Patrol reported that the number of people trying to cross the border illegally in July of 2024 reached its lowest number since 2021. So the numbers have actually gone down. And that's a problem for Republicans because you got the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, claiming that his Operation Lone Star is the reason why the numbers have gone down. He doesn't dispute that the number of illegals trying to cross have decreased. He's simply saying that the credit belongs to the state of Texas and not the federal government. Well, that's a separate argument we could have, and maybe there's some truth to that, and maybe the state of Texas has done a lot to prevent more illegals from trying to cross the border. But the fact remains that he's admitted that the numbers are down, the exact opposite of what's being claimed by the Donald Trump campaign. So there's already a schism within the Republican Party. I find that interesting. Within the Republican Party, giving you two completely different versions of events. You got the governor of Texas telling you that numbers are down and we did it. We deserve the credit for it. And then you've got former President Trump telling you that the numbers are up and it's all Biden's fault. So that's just another example of how out of touch with reality the Trump campaign truly is. Oh, sorry there. I had to get a drink of water. I think my throat was just getting dry or something. I'm not sure what that was. That was strange. But so there you got two different versions of reality coming from the same party, which isn't really that surprising. And we haven't even talked about veterans yet. So the veterans issue, I don't know if that's going to come up in this debate or not. It should. And the disrespect that the Trump campaign and Donald Trump himself continues to show veterans. I mean, which example do I pick? Do I start with them saying that the Presidential Medal of Freedom is equal to or better than the Medal of Honor, which is ridiculous? That angered a lot of veterans. Should I go with the most recent efforts of the Trump campaign to film and make a campaign commercial in Arlington, which, by the way, is illegal? You can take pictures and do videography in certain portions of Arlington Cemetery, okay? But where they were, Section 60, which is for where folks have newly been interred, it is prohibited. That's a federal law. And it doesn't matter if someone invited you to do that. I know a Gold Star family asked him to be there. I understand that. But that doesn't give you a loophole in federal law. The law still applies. And so the taking of photographs there and using them for campaign purposes, which his campaign did and continues to do, not only violates federal law, it's a slap in the face to Arlington Cemetery and everyone who is interred there and all the loved ones that missed them or missed them because there are folks that are there from years ago and their loved ones may not be alive anymore. It's an insult to the entire place. That's what it comes down to. It's an insult to the entire place. So when you have someone who constantly and almost every opportunity he gets denigrates veterans and their service, that's someone who doesn't have the credibility to be commander-in-chief. He doesn't have the credibility to be commander-in-chief. He doesn't meet the minimum standards to serve in the military. Certainly, we will not allow convicted felons to serve in the United States military. Well, if you can't serve in the United States military, you're absolutely unfit and unqualified to lead the United States military, which is what the commander-in-chief would be doing. That's what the commander-in-chief does. The president is sink, commander-in-chief, the highest authority to exercise over the military. And Donald Trump is absolutely unqualified for that. I know there have been critics out there. My Republican friends have shared some of these videos saying, what about Biden? You know, Biden did the same thing. No, he didn't. That's absolutely not true. The pictures of Biden that were shown and have been circulated of him at Arlington were in 2010. There's no election that year. He was already vice president. He was there in an official capacity as the vice president to lay wreaths on headstones. It was not part of a campaign, and it was an official duty of the vice president. That's a completely different thing than someone who is not in office. Former President Trump is not the current president, so he is not currently a holder of federal office. He is running for president, so this is a campaign, and the pictures and videos he took is part of an election campaign. So those two things are completely different, and the comparison is absolutely false. So when someone tells you, well, Biden did the same thing, no, he didn't. He absolutely did not. That's another false claim repeated by Republicans and repeated by the Trump campaign that have absolutely not only no basis in fact, they are intentionally false. They're intentionally false. They know he didn't do that, and they don't care. They're lying about it because that's what the Trump campaign does. They lie constantly. At every chance they get, they lie. Another example, back to the housing issue, and this is related to healthcare as well, because the campaign made the same claim about undocumented immigrants and illegals. They said there was a picture that was posted on Truth Social, and I think it was also shared on his campaign account at Twitter, that showed what looks like a hospital building in the background. It was a whole stream of people going into it. And at the top of it, in some strangely written letters, which look kind of misshapen, and I'll get to that in a second, it says emergency. And the text says, you know, the Biden administration and Harris is bringing in a flood of illegals to our hospitals. And to add to that, on a separate post, former President Trump also said that illegals are getting mortgages to buy homes when that's contributing to the housing crisis. Well, let's deal with that second one first. It's absolutely not true. 4.3 million mortgages were issued in 2023, according to Equifax. 4.3 million. Of those, 5,000 had individual tax identification numbers, ITINs. Those are given for folks who are not eligible for Social Security numbers. And most of those people happen to come from Latin American countries. 5,000 out of 4.3 million, that's 0.1%. So 99.99%. have absolutely nothing to do with that, which is just another example of Donald Trump showing he has no idea what he's talking about. But the hospital one is more interesting because the image itself was created by artificial intelligence. It's not a real hospital. It doesn't exist. If you've ever used AI software or AI programs, and I have, I've used them quite a bit, you'll find out, and this is something that they share, no matter which one you're using, they all have this in common. Some are slightly better than others, but most of them have this problem. I've never used one that didn't. They can create some pretty stunning images that look realistic, but for some reason they are terrible at drawing letters. They look misshapen or strange, and they misspell words all the time. I'm not sure why that is. Maybe someone out there who knows more about how AI software works can explain that. I have no idea. But if you use it, a lot of times they'll misspell words and they'll look funny. And that is exactly how the emergency post from the Trump campaign looks. It looks exactly like that. So if you've used it before, you'll absolutely know there's no question that that is an artificially generated image. It's not real. Plus, on top of that, have you ever been to a hospital where the name at the top of the building wasn't the name of the hospital? They just had emergency written in front of it? Nowhere. It doesn't happen. It's silly. So that's another example of unreality being marketed by the Trump campaign to his potential voters and to the American public. Unreality, because it's not real. It is synthetic. It's created. It's not just that someone wrote something on a picture that a real picture that wasn't there. They created the entire thing. So the whole thing is made up. The picture itself is imaginary, and so is the problem that it purports to represent. Do you really think, and I guess the Trump campaign wants us to think this, do you really think people from Central and South America would walk over 1,000 miles through deserts, jungles, mountains, swamps, cartel land, criminal infested neighborhoods, and endure weeks or even months of hardship and threats to their life. Do you really think they would go through all of that just so they could arrive at our southern border and get what the Trump campaign claims is free health care? You're going to go through all that so you can go to an ER? You're going to go through all that so you can see a doctor? I don't think so. It makes no sense. The reason folks are coming north is simple. Because of the conditions that they are in are so terrible that they would rather risk life and limb than stay where they are. Venezuela is one example. There are other problems. The El Salvador, San Salvador, Guatemala, areas down there in the very central part, which are just south of Mexico, where there are heavy drug trafficking areas. So a lot of cartels move their product through there. And because they do that, they compete with each other. And there's a lot of armed individuals guarding those shipments that pick fights with each other. So there's a lot of violence associated because they try to rob each other or they try to stop someone else's shipment from going through so they can put a competitor out of business, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of violence in that area that's related to the drug trade. That's another example. A third reason is natural disasters. Places like Honduras, or again, I mentioned Guatemala, when hurricanes hit those places, and they've been doing so with an increasing frequency in recent years, the damage that they do is not only catastrophic and widespread, it never gets repaired. There are places that were flattened by hurricanes 3-5 years ago that have never been fixed. So every time a new one comes, it just increases the damage, decreases the amount of living spaces there because the governments don't work. There's no capital. There's no resources. There's no ability for the countries to fix those problems. So it makes already strained and dangerous conditions that much worse. So you put it all together, it adds up to an increase over the past five years as a whole, an increased number of people heading towards our border looking for refuge. Some of these, I think, should be classified as refugees, not migrants. They're seeking to escape from conditions that would kill them otherwise, in much the same way that folks that are fleeing active war zones are considered refugees for the same reason. Why the numbers have gone down in the last few months, maybe the Texas operation has contributed, maybe the Biden administration's stance or new policies have had an effect on that. Maybe people are just trying to wait and see what happens with their election because they do pay attention to that. And so they are watching to see who wins. And so maybe they're waiting to see how this goes before they decide whether or not they want to try to cross legally or illegally. But those are just more things that Donald Trump has no credibility to talk about. He didn't fix it during his 4 years in office. They didn't change much. They didn't make any headway. None of the problems, none of the root causes in Central and South America that are driving people north, none of those were addressed by the Trump administration at all. Their sole focus was what? Build a wall, right? Let's wait till the last possible place, the last step on this train, the last stop, rather, and that's where we want to put our solution up. Well, that's the wrong place to solve it. You can't solve this problem at our border. The problem has to be solved down south. The problem has to be solved down south, and that is exactly the task that Vice President Harris was given, was to lead an effort, an international effort, to try to address some of those problems. Did she succeed? Nope. You know why? Because they can't be fixed in 4 years. They can't be fixed in 8 years. I'm not even sure they can be fixed in 10 years, but at least we were trying to make some progress on that front. At least the Biden administration, in sending Vice President Harris there, was trying to make an effort and solve the problem where it needs to be solved, south of the border. So I hope that Vice President Harris is able to convey some of those things during the debate. You know, it's a limited time frame, and I'm not sure. I don't remember how long this one is. They're usually 60 minutes or 90 minutes, but when you factor in commercial breaks and you factor in, you know, the times that the candidates have for rebuttal, you're talking about folks who get enormous questions and they get, you know, 30 seconds, 60 seconds, if that, to provide answers. I would argue it's almost impossible to really give a credible answer to these kind of questions in that time frame. It's just not enough. Can you give a polished soundbite, or can you land some zingers in that amount of time against your opponent? Yeah, you can, and they probably will. But bottom line, it's difficult to have a really in-depth to give the kind of quality answers to the questions, because the questions that are asked are important. They demand our attention. They deserve credible answers. I don't know if we'll see that in this particular debate, but what I would look for, what I hope for, rather, I should say, because I don't know what I'm not part of their staff, so I don't know what their actual strategy is. But what I hope for, what I hope to see from the Harris campaign is to highlight how an issue after issue after issue, Donald Trump has no credibility to solve these issues because on most of them, he's been part of the problem. And some of them, he still is. Those are the things that I hope to see next week in debate. We'll see how it goes. I don't know what's going to happen when we actually get there. Unexpected things obviously could happen. We saw that just the last time with the Biden-Trump debates. Something unexpected could happen this time that no one anticipated. I would not rule that out, although I think that both candidates have watched that last debate and they both learned lessons from it, and I expect to see them try to apply those to their own advantage in the debate that's coming up next week. Well, those are things I would have discussed had we had more time this morning on the Jack Patty Show. You know, we only had 5 or 10 minutes to talk about the election and the debate, and I wanted to get into it in more detail, which I sort of have on this show today. We'll shoot for a weekly broadcast for Kentucky Caliber for the remainder of the election. I usually publish on Tuesdays. This one, since I was on the show on a Friday, will be different, but Tuesday is typically the day that I will try to publish new content and new episodes. So look forward to hearing from everyone. Thanks for listening. And remember, we're in this until the election day rolls around. We've only got, 8, 9 weeks or something like that to go. So this is crunch time to get out there and support our candidate and make the case to the American voter that Vice President Harris is who they should be voting for in the 2024 election, and we'll try to continue to do that here on Kentucky Caliber. So thanks for listening, and have a great day.